Chapter 14. Ro Tway is stumbling, for the deck is lurching around heavily, and her legs are buckled and lesioned. Death has been pawing at her shoulder for a long time. She is not overly concerned about her increasingly difficult life ending, but there is always duty enough to keep her on her feet, and she does care about that. She was born on this ship. She knows no other existence but that of its clammy corridors and its slopping decks. Her eyes are milky white, her skin like translucent parchment. She is perfectly adapted to the dark, to the slightly higher than standard gravity, to the heat and the moisture. She reaches out to grab onto pipework, steadying herself. She knows where every rivet and piston head is, and treads around the obstacles surely. This is mostly instinct now. You can't learn Solace's layout in the normal way, for it changes all the time. Bulkheads shift, engineering components move. Some sections are becoming heavily organic, pulsing and perspiring in the dark, whereas others clang with unusual internal noises. Every time Ro Tway removes a casing, she does not know what she will see. A nest of bloatworms writhing amid the valves, a pair of proto-lungs shivering as they suck up engine oil, or perhaps just bare metal, clicking over as it should. That is why she is the cultivator, as much a custodian of living things as inert materials. One day, far into the future, the entire ship will be a single amorphous organism. She is helping to make this a reality, to coax and to nurture. It is hard work, back-breaking and relentless, but it gives her a certain measure of pride. She has sons and daughters growing up in the lower decks, already learning to grasp a ratchet and siphon a fuel sump. If they survive the mutations and the plagues, one of them might one day become cultivator. And if they are blessed with fertility, in centuries to come, one of their progeny might be there on that mystical and long-awaited day when Solace speaks for the first time, not in hisses of steam or scrapes of iron, but in a real voice, with real words. Ro Tway moves off again, a welder gun in one hand, the other pushing against the grease-slick walls. A brace of lifter servitors chunters along behind her, their bulky frames grating up against the mesh roof of the narrow ways. Weak lights glow and flare in the heavy dark, exposing caked-on grime and curdled runoff. Vorks is asking a lot of her, but then he always does. The plasma drives are dangerously hot, their enormous chambers shaking with a haze of racing pre-burners. She has seen conduits give out, filling entire sublevels with poison gas. Now it is the main isolator unit, the gangle of valves and pressure pumps that switches motive power from the warp drives to the plasma drives. Something has collapsed within the main tower, and so she hurries to clamp it down. This takes her a long way from the engineering control, down under a row of big plasma conduits, tubes the diameter of a HAB unit that shoot under reinforced deck plates for 500 meters. She can hear the contents swill and boom within the pocked enclosure, yearning to burst out and drench them all in a tide of flesh-melting corrosiveness.
"What will be,"
she muses, humming a merry prayer to the god while fighting her way down the narrowing capillary route. It is then that she sees the shape, a long way down, half hidden behind a screen of pressed metal gantries and crisscrossed struts. The air is thicker down there, made into a backlit swamp of sick green, so that the colossal engine components around them are black silhouettes over a churning chasm. It is a walkway, slung perilously between the convex outlines of big support piles. Something moves across it, half visible in the drifting smog. An unbroken, surely, too huge to be anything else. Maybe huger than that, even. A Cardane, bulked up by all that overlapping plate. Ro Tway crouches for a moment, unsure what to do. The servitors behind her clatter to a halt. Surely the unbroken will detect her, but perhaps the din from the drives is too much. Or perhaps he is off on his own mission, displaying all that single-minded resolve that they do so well, oblivious to anything around him that poses no threat. The mists clear for a moment, blown into tatters by the belch from a brass valve head, and she sees things a little more clearly. Yes, It is the Lord Garstag, heading down to where the warp drive foundations are turbo-bolted into the underpinnings of the Engenarium zone. What can he be doing there, she wonders. What could bring him down to this place while there is fighting to be done? But then the miasma closes again, wafted by powerful currents from below. Up ahead, she hears the first harsh rattle from the innards of the isolator tower. It sounds like a major component has come loose, rattling around its housing and threatening to break out. She glances down again and sees nothing. He is gone. Perhaps he was never there at all. Solace does send phantasms from time to time, especially when the mind is oppressed or preoccupied. So she presses on, panting and sweating, her servitors in tow. She must remember to inform the Lord Vaux about this, when time allows. But there are things to do while the ship is fighting. So many things to do. Hovik does as she is asked. That is impressive, for this maneuver must look to her like suicide. Solace is lumbering now, struggling to maintain speed. One of the many dozen frigates has scored a palpable wound, and it sears the plasma drives and bleeds out momentum. Another enemy has managed to get a cluster of torpedoes hitting just the foreships of the bridge, knocking out a major sensor cluster. The effect on the bridge is strange, like putting on blurred Oculus filters. But the enemy cannot stop this now. Solace is too close to its target, too massive, and with too much of that all-important momentum. The crippled conveyor is trying to nudge out of range, but its engines are not designed for battlefield response. Somewhere on that ship, Vaux thinks, they are beginning to panic. Solace's bows slip across the churning well of the gun's maw. Its shadow slides across still crackling iron plates, darkening an already dark red hull. The gap between edges is now perilous, just a few hundred meters, in void terms, almost nothing. Scraps of plasma lightning jump across the emptiness, briefly linking the two behemoths together before sparking into nothing. Vaux feels another faint thrill, another faint stir. He has placed his ship between the cannon and its target. It is a sacrificial move, one destined to provoke the tech priests to fire now and unleash whatever they have wrapped up inside those layers of ugliness. Now Solace is fully across the kill zone, interposed between the gun's muzzle and the rest of the battle. Vaux can feel the tenseness on the bridge, the tightness of the jaws, the darting looks up at him from the pits. Any moment they expect to hear the explosions, the race of fire from the lower decks, the cold gasp of the void as it comes to grip them. He lets himself imagine the same thing, just for a second. He visualizes the eruption from below, and the howl of flame and racing atmospheres, and enjoys it. To linger any longer, however, would be indulgent. The priests on that conveyor do not want to fire. Vaux is old enough and learned enough to recognize the pattern of their precious weapon. It is Nova Cannon class, though larger than all but the very most ruinous battleship slung varieties. Such guns are designed for extreme ranged fire, and its gunners would not detonate at this proximity given the choice. That basic situation, though, on its own, would not normally be enough to keep them alive. A daring Mechanicus captain would take the risk to clear their sights, even if Solace's destruction did some collateral damage of its own. But Vaux knows all the species of Imperial system-class weapons. He has spent centuries cataloguing them and cross-referencing them. He knows the difference between a shell created on Lucius and one created on Mars. Indeed, he knows the difference between a shell created in the Northern Hemisphere macro factories of Lucius and a shell created in the same world's slightly less capable Southern Hemisphere standard production forges. He has often found such knowledge useful, for all that younger minds scoff at it, and this situation is no different. That cannon, he sees by its marks and dimensions, fires rift shells. On impact, rift shells open a short-lived tear into the warp, sending everything within their blast sphere ripping into immaterialism. It is a horrifying weapon, capable of eating clean through the armored hide of the greatest of warships, and requires enormous resources to deploy and engage. But it has its drawbacks. The destruction sphere is massive. Solace is now so close that if the cannon fired, both ships would be sucked into the resultant vortex and caught up in a mutual embrace of destruction. The conveyor's true target would thus never be hit, and whatever plan it was intended to achieve would go unexecuted. The Mechanicus would hate that. Right now, Vaux knows they are running every algorithm ever burned onto their systems to extract the weapon from this situation without its loss. They will not do so for long. Very soon, perhaps even this very second, they will realize that there is no escape from this tangle, and that they really need to fire. The order will burn across the command synapses in the conveyor's heart, damning both ships to oblivion. So Vaux acts. This momentary hesitation, generated by the tech priest's greatest and most excusable failing, pride in their creations, was all he required to get into position.
Tox dump! All vents! Full capacity!
He orders, sending the comburst simultaneously to all command nodes with highest priority attached, knowing that the more acute of his section commanders will already have guessed what he has in mind and set things in train. And they have. Hatches slam back, pipes stiffen into full capacity, blast doors grind open. A thousand orifices across Solus's underside gape, and the greenish flicker of void shield snatches out. The ship's bowels open. The effluent is thick, black, stiff, and frothing, a concentrated slurry of everything foul and curdled from the very depths of the warship's chem-drenched intestines. It is the liquefied bones of strangled Neverborn, the excreta of the apothecarians, the refuse of the bioweapons labs, the runoff from Slurt's crowded experiment tables. For decades, it has all stewed in the Geller-shrouded containment tanks, fermenting and coagulating and spawning under heat lamps. New things have emerged in that soup of horror, chains of metal-gnawing molecules that copulate madly with strings of flesh-dissolving bacteria. The whole morass is shot through with a demonic, bound by the warp and coalesced into void-defying globules. When it shoots out like projectile vomit into open space, it does not freeze dry and explode. It only gushes more strongly, streaming in incontinent torrents in search of firm matter to latch onto. The impact is horrific. Tons and tons of it in a roaring, bubbling cascade, crashing lumpily into the crackling cannon jaws and flooding down into the chasm beyond, overwhelming and choking, foaming like an incoming riptide. The conveyor's weakened void shields are smashed aside. The cataracts seethe across every exposed plate. The lightning is drowned, the fires are drowned, all is drowned under that magnificent, stomach-turning payload of ruin. A purge Solus proceeds on course, stately and unhurried, while the conveyor crumples in on itself, its structure now being eaten alive. There are explosions from deep within as power cables are burned through. It loses trajectory, its acid-pocked prow dipping back towards Agrippina's gravity well, and great jets of fire escape from its underhull. The Nova Cannon is now a semi-fused hunk of virulent metal, doused in foulness and folding in on itself like paper in a clenched fist. The Tox dump carries on eating, fizzing and consuming and melting, causing fresh explosions to ripple along the intact metalwork. Vaux watches it die on the rear-facing viewers. There is a pleasing irony in the weapon's demise, he reflects, the biological gaining revenge on the mechanical. This is the kind of lesson that might be heeded, if only by more imaginative minds.
Marvelous, he breathes,
observing the gathering pace of destruction. The luxury does not last long. Such flamboyant behavior provokes a response, and already mainline attack ships are swiveling. Solus may not be the most assuming of vessels, a dreary hunk of grey-green matter amid a fleet of peacocks, but they know what it can do now.
Void shields back to full coverage, Vaux orders, returning to the throne. Pick up speed. Drop 2 points towards re-entry.
He is already thinking again, studying the intricate web of threats and counter-threats. He sees the remnants of the conveyor's escorts muster for yet another attack run, and their combined danger is considerable. He sees patterns emerge in constellations of larger vessels, The Blood Angels are here, and their strike cruisers are cutting through Kosalax's formations with impeccable void mastery. The balance of power still remains with the Despoilers' forces, and it is likely that planetfall will be achieved soon, but nothing is yet written into fate. Solus is getting battered. The tox dump trick cannot be pulled again, for the ship's innards are empty, so the next engagement will have to be of a more conventional kind. Standard ranged weapons, boarding actions, the cut of blade and bolter in the dark. Dragon will be happy about that. Rotwe is working well. They are pulling clear of the wreckage, carving a careful path. Kodad has the broadsides combining effectively. Now, it is all about decisiveness, picking the right target. Vaux sees a ship plummeting fast to meet them from higher up in the sphere, piloted expertly, lean and blunt-edged. Its flanks are near black-grey, limned with silver. It is fresh from a kill of its own, and the straggling remains of a thousand suns frigate cling to its thruster trails. It is on an intercept course. Its flanks are burning, though not with impacts. Boarding pods have been launched, and its solid round batteries are gearing up for a salvo. For a second, he struggles to place the livery. It is Adeptus Astartes, that is clear, though the names and numbers elude him. Then he places it.
"The Iron Shades," he says with relish. "Come about! That is our target!"